Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, this is Richard Patrick from Filter, and you're listening to my good friend John on Talking Metal.
Rock over London,
Zurich,
Auckland,
Dublin,
Dallas,
Milwaukee,
Los Angeles,
Sydney,
Indianapolis,
Tokyo,
Seattle,
Paris,
Budapest,
Berlin,
New York. Ladies and gentlemen, two men who are committed to rocking you wherever you might be, John Astronomy and Mark Striegel. Welcome to the Talking Metal Podcast, broadcasting around the world from TalkingMetal.com and Striegel'sMusicNews.com.
Hey, it's John Astronomy. It is Friday, October 1st. Welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. I am on the New York Waterway Ferry headed from New Jersey to Manhattan, and it's a rainstorm. Places are flooded. Most people can't actually get to work. I'm lucky because I live near the river, the Hudson River, and I just jump on a boat and it takes me about 10 minutes and I'm on the other side. So this episode is going to be another great one. It contains part two of my interview with Richard Patrick from Filter. Now, if you listen to part one, we ended with the song Hey Man, Night Shot from 1995 Short Bus. And basically what happened was I was stopping the tape for a second just to check and make sure everything was recording, and we started talking about the song, and then we got into a great conversation, so I decided to start recording it. And then we went on to talk about some of the new record and some of the past records and just a lot of other cool stuff. So without any further ado, to set the mood, let me get right back into Hey Man, Nice Shot. And then we'll hear the interview and we'll come back and finish up the show after that, okay? So right now, this is Filter with Hey Man, Nice Shot.
Eastern culture is based on like if there's a, you know, to save shame, it's accepted to, if you kill yourself, that's like, yeah, you're being proud. You know what I mean? So it's weird.
What was so strange about it is he had different envelopes, one with a note to his wife. He had one with his organ donor card, and then he had maybe one with something else. And then he had that manila envelope with the gun. And he, what he was talking about even before that was hinting that he's about to do something.
Yeah.
And it was so thought out. That's so weird.
Yeah. It's so disturbing. I don't even like watching it as an adult. Because, you know, it's weird. The older you get, the more sensitive you are to that stuff. When you're young and you're drinking with your buddies, it's kind of like, holy shit, look at that. But it's hard. It's really hard. It you know, and I had the camera angle footage of directly behind the wow. podium. So it's there's the one camera angle that's straight on, and he shoots himself, and you see something go on the back of the wall, and he falls down. And then I had the footage of... And it's the camera guy is in the photo where he puts the gun. He's actually in the photo. He had a fro. He had this, like, killer afro. And he zeroes in on his face. When he falls and slumps behind the podium, his body kind of convulses and he kind of shudders. And this, the opening of the bullet, the opening created a big hole in his nasal cavity. So all the blood in his brain
poured out
of his nose like a faucet, and it was just brutal. Plus, there was a little blood that came out here, which might have been a bullet fragment that kind of took a right turn and went out the. It's just, yeah, that's I haven't seen it in 10 years, and I know all that. You know what I mean?
Right. So it must have really had a major effect of seeing something that disturbing.
The reality is, and back in 1989, 1990, 1991, when you know I was growing up and kind of turning into in my early 20s, you know, you just didn't see shit like that. You never saw. I mean, even Faces of Death wasn't as graphic and as right. horrendous as that. And you become morbidly curious. Like, you know, you there's a curiosity about, well, what does death look like? What is that? And so, you know, now the kids that come back from Iraq are like, you don't want to know. And then I'm reading this this book, With the Old Breed, by Eugene Sledge. His you know, he was literally at, he was on Okinawa, and he was on, a lot of the stuff, that the really horrendous stuff, is in Okinawa, but all of it's bad. But just the way people behaved during the war, some of the things the soldiers did, the Japanese disembodied the bodies of the American soldier, but then the Americans would take gold teeth as souvenirs. And it was like the things they did to the Japanese while some of them were still alive, and just the, and you just, when you're in your early 20s, it's just like, what? Like, that's possible? You know, because in America, I'm saying, because most right. of the yeah, rest of the world right. fucking knows about death. The rest of the world, right. you know, 80% of the people in the world don't have a car. I mean, that's an amazing fact, you know. You know, Hey Man, Nice Shot. You know, I saw that footage when I was a kid, and... You know, I wanted to write something. I didn't know what to write about. You know, I'm 22, 21. Like, what am I going to write about? So having seen that and thinking about it, I just put some words together, and, like, within 10 minutes, it was written. And, you know, it's one of the biggest songs I ever wrote. And it's bizarre because it was released, you know, 4 or 5 years later after I wrote it. And it came out after Kurt Cobain had killed himself. And there are DJs that still talk about how that song is about Kurt Cobain. And I have the copyright to prove it. Right. It's copywritten back to like 1991. So, you know, unfortunately, but the record company kind of copyrights it, and it's listed after. But, you know, I can show you the computer that I did it on. I still have the computer that I did it on, and it's, you know, it's still in my studio as like a relic. And you know, it really hurt me because, you know, Dave Grohl's driving, down the road. Here's the song. Didn't think about it. Friend goes, hey, someone's trying to make money off of Kurt's death. And, you know, he actually, he's like, Rich, I saw him and I said, you have to hear this from me directly. I want you to look into my eyes. The song was written before he died. It's not about Kurt Cobain. Know that. And no matter what you hear, I want you to know that in my heart, like, I'm telling you, it's not written. And he goes, you know what? I totally believe you. He goes, Rich, all the Foo Fighters stuff on the first record, he goes, honestly, so many people kept referring to, like, thinking I'm referring to it. He's like, I wrote that shit before I was in Nirvana. Right. So the public has this, and plus, you know, they're stirring up controversy, and they're, you know, and it saddens me, because I don't know if we fixed it, but at Amazon, in our bio, I read Amazon, it said, you know, Hey Man, Nice Shot was inspired by Kurt Cobain's suicide. And it breaks my heart that, like, a huge organization like that is so massive that they can't, you know, contact someone and let's get the real bio or something. But since then, I think they did fix it yet? They did fix it. So we got it fixed in the year 2010. But I tell you what, what are you supposed to do? I mean, you know, so I had to kind of publicly, like, come out and say, you know what, it was written kind of about R. Bud Dwyer because he held a press conference. And I actually told that to someone in confidence in my label at the time. And they were like, dude, you want to know that they, you know how those guys operate. Right. They, you know, you're not allowed to hear what this is about, but dude, it's about that guy that held the press conference. It's not even about that. And then the world became an incredibly small place because now Mrs. Dwyer lives in Phoenix and was like, wow. What? Why are you dragging this out? He's got grandkids and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, we never mention his name. It's still, the song is vague,
right,
and
right,
it's inspired by. It's not necessarily his account of what he did. It's about a suicide, anybody's suicide. So, you know, and we had to explain that to her, and, you know, and it's just this big thing.
It's unfair that people don't fact check. I can't believe that Amazon put that on. It's unfair to you that you have to go out, you know, do all this public talking about it when you're just trying to write a song, and then, you know, a bunch of people that don't do their homework ruin it.
Right. But, you know, again, like, you know, it's one of those things. When you have that many records coming out and that many things, it can get, you know, it can get tough. So I, you know, it's just that, yeah, I've been dealing with this for 15 years.
Sorry for bringing it up.
No. You know what, though? I've accepted it, so it's cool.
Here's one thing that's not about the lyrics or what the song is about. I think the riff behind the chorus part where it says, hey, man, nice shot, is one of the greatest ever riffs ever written.
I gotta say, when it happened, I literally was like, does that sound too much like Soundgarden a little bit? I was a little second guessy with it, but I'm so glad that I stuck to my guns. Actually, I was right. I had performed it, and this guy, Stu Zechman, was jamming with us, and he stole it and put it on the Stabbing Westward record, and they actually kind of found out about that, so they got rid of him, and they were like, you can't take people's riffs and put them on our records. So, and I know Chris, you know, and actually he's in this band called The Dreaming, which is really good. But he was like, yeah, that's not cool.
Wow.
So yeah, he stole it from me, and it was funny because before we released it, we said, hey, we're gonna just take our song and you take your song, and, you know, that's that. And he's like, okay. So, and then ours was this, like, massive hit. And it was just kind of like, oh, wow, we did. You know, it kind of was vindication. You know, if you're going to rip people off, you better, you know. So it was cool to have that, like, hey, man, we actually had massive success with ours. What'd you guys do?
Right.
So
they actually put it on the record?
Yeah, it's
record?
A song called Ungod.
I'm going to check it out. You know, I just want to hear how blatantly somebody could take a riff.
Wow.
But they put so much stuff on the top of it that, like, you can't really hear it as Matt. Like, ours was, like, guitar, drums, right. vocal. There was no, and some crazy sound design, but that was like way off in the distance.
You know, what's really funny is that back in that time period, would that come out in like 95?
Yep.
In 91 to 94-ish, was in a band with Mark, who's the co-host of Talking Metal, and we had a song, and it had a similar riff. And then when your song came out, we did the respectable thing and kind of said, well, you know, is this too close? Because we don't want people to think that we're copying you guys. But
the weird thing is that, like, if Chuck Berry walked around with, like, you know, the knowledge that, like, you know, three chords and the truth and, like, he could have, I don't know how, he could have sued every right. single person that ever put, you know, what is it, C, G, D. Right. That's it. That's rock and roll. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na. And there were so many variances on that chord progression. But the reality is, you know, we were actually sued because someone thought they could copyright two chords. And, like, it was the first, there were first two chords of Take a Picture, and it's kind of like the rite of passage. There's you know, oh, you're being sued for copyright infringement, welcome to being in the top 10, right. you know, welcome to these top 5, we made it to number 4. So, and I'm like, well, what does that mean? Well, there's a judge that doesn't understand music theory, and he's siding with, you know, he's allowing,
right, he's letting it,
you know, I you know, I arm myself to the fucking teeth with, you know, lawyers and you know, musicians and you know, professors and, like, you know, and then it came down to a video deposition, and I just said, you can't copyright two chords. Plus, and he was trying to get me on, like, I heard his music first or something. I'm like,
how did you hear their music?
I'm like, truth be told about Take a Picture, the fucking bass line is almost identical to a song called Bad by U2. They're not coming after me because you know why? I think they got it from Peter Gabriel, a song called Biko, which is exactly the same bass line as Biko. So, you know, it's almost, I'm like, if you really want to start, you know, hemming and hawing over copyright shit, why don't you go call U2 and pull them in here? Because they'll fucking, they'll like be like, who gives a shit? You, little Phil, why would we want to? So it became like really funny. And like, you know, you end up spending some money on that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was you know, it was amazing. I mean, it was back when I was using alcohol and drugs and everything, but I got ready for that deposition. I was sobered up, and I got in my suit, and I sat there and did this video deposition. And they said, what do you think of this whole lawsuit? I said, it's astounding. This entire thing astounds me. And like, they had nothing. Like, that was the end of this big, huge thing. And they're like, do you know blah, 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 blah? I'm like, no. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I don't know any of these people. Like, it was amazing. It was so, I've never felt more, like, that was the one time in court where I was like, absolutely like, yes! and my lawyer, Orion, he has worked with all these amazing megastars for this particular thing. And he goes, hands down, in the 25 years I've been doing this, you were the best witness I have ever had. There was one, because we had a thing. He's like, I'm going to tap your foot if you get crazy, and you just got to be careful. And I'm like, okay. And so he was like yawning or something, or like he was like stretching, and he accidentally tapped my foot, and I went, and he goes, no, you're doing great. And I was like, and I'm like, it was really funny. It was really funny. But yeah, you know, you got to do this stuff. This is funny because most of the kids are like, dude, people get sued in rock and roll. It's like, yeah, dude.
Yep.
It's not just for putting your ball sack on someone's head like Marilyn Manson. It's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
So let's tell all the people who are listening today where they can not only hear the music, but where they can see it. And we encourage everybody to go out and actually buy the whole album, The Trouble with Angels, sure. Because I like to listen to an album together. I like to listen to all the songs together. What do you think about that?
I think you're absolutely right, and only for this reason. The artist, the Grammy-nominated artist that did Short Bus and Title of Record, the original old-school-looking records, brought it. We have Brian Prozacki and Deborah Norcross, And we made a package that is so amazing and beautiful. And I'm absolutely saying it from the bottom of my heart. It folds out, and it, this beautiful angel like pops out from her graphics. You get, when you buy the deluxe, which is actually on sale over at Best Buy for $9.99, you get two discs. One, it's almost a double record. It's just shy of a double record. And you get this big poster. And I'm so proud of the packaging. And we worked on it so hard. And we, like, every day we're sending back JPEGs back and forth to try and make it just absolutely perfect. And there's so many hidden messages about what the record's about, the numerology. Everything has meaning. And everything has, like, this intellectual kind of philosophical discussion that's been going on for thousands of years. And we just put our two cents in. And I recommend you go to Best Buy. I recommend that you go to the store with everything in my heart to buy that deluxe, because you get so much more songs. The bonus tracks that are on the deluxe are absolutely – there's a song that I have written. It's called Plume, Plumes of Smoke. It's actually written from the perspective of Saddam Hussein watching George Bush enter his country, and, like, he's waiting for he's waiting for George Bush to come and, you know, dethrone him from his, you know, his throne in the sandbox, as I call it. And, you know, and just the insanity of what he must have been thinking of as you know, and it's negative as shit. It's not, it's just, again, it's not pro or negative. It's not, it's just examining the phenomenon of where he was at. And just taking a look at it, and, like, it's just like Arbe Dwyer. It's like, he held a press conference and he killed himself. It's like inspired by. So I have all these weird lyrics like that, and I love that. And I absolutely go to Best Buy and get the deluxe. It's wholeheartedly like it's such a good thing.
$9.99. I mean, that's cheap for not only a single record, but for a near double album, two CDs. And some unbelievable packaging that's like three-dimensional. It's not just like a jewel case.
It's completely collector's item stuff. It's one for the books. I mean, it's really cool.
You listeners, a lot of you guys are, you know, young people. But when I was young, and I'm sure the same with Richard, I would read every word on any record, and like you said, there's a lot of hidden messages. So, yeah. And it's a cool thing, guys. You should go do it, because iTunes is okay when you want to download a tune, but you're missing the experience that Richard intended for you to have when listening to this. And guys, you can save up $9.99. Go buy it.
Yeah, really? Shit. Right. They're like, dude, I just bought a new terabyte hard drive. I can't afford $9.99, you know.
You could do it. And the video for the Inevitable Relapse premiered on Yahoo. What's pretty cool is that Matt Larson and people over at Rocket Science and you guys all collaborated on...
Yeah. And Jesus.
Who was the director, right?
Yeah. Jesus Rodriguez. Alicia, this, like, very mild-mannered computer person, came up with this whole thing of, like... You know, I hate being so on the nose, but, you know, the Inevitable Relapse was just, like... Let's talk about my drug problem. And, you know, because I couldn't say anything back in the day. My parents were watching this, and I didn't want to be so public. But now that I'm, I've been sober for so long, it's like, let's talk about that. Because a lot of the times, we're good. You know, a lot of those, that's the problem with drugs, is there's a lot of good times when you're doing that crazy shit. There's a lot of bad times, and you can die. But there's years where it works. So, the Inevitable Relapse, we started making the video, and we were talking to Jesus, and then someone had mentioned, like, this idea of, like, well, we have this idea of, like, this really hot girl who, like, has this guy, and he's, like, been kidnapped, or he's just, like, been, he's in some kind of handcuffs. And I'm like, no S&M bullshit, I don't want any of that fucking subculture stuff in my video. Like, I'm not, you know, nothing against it, right. I just, we're not that bent. And so, you know, the whole thing was, she has got him. She's got control of him. She's punching him. They, you know, you think he hates it. And then he runs, he escapes while she's in the shower. He goes downstairs and you see him turn around and think to himself, and he goes right back up for more. That's addiction. That is the complete, it's a beautiful girl that beats the fucking shit out of you every night with a fucking hammer. And we didn't use the hammer because... you know, we were hoping to maybe get it on some TV shows, but right. that's actually pretty hard. But we had to keep it graphic because we wanted that, you know. And you come back for more. That's the thing. You come back for more with addiction. So the new plan is with some videos, if I can talk a little bit about that, is I've actually come up with this whole thing that, like, you know, maybe we do – like, I know the German record company Nuclear Blast wants to do Fades Like a Photograph as a single.
Which is a great song. And that was also on the 2012 soundtrack, right?
Yeah, it was written by – it was co-written by me and this guy, Harold Klauser, and his buddy Tom. And they had kind of had this music before, and I transposed it to D and, like, worked on it. But he actually wrote the script with Roland Emmerich and was the producer. And he literally has a shirt that says, "I am multitasking." Like, and he's the composer of the movie. So he's like, you know, he's amazing. But he's like, "Richard, I love the way," because he's from Austria. He's like, "I love the way that you, you know, the way that you sing, and I want to collaborate with you, and I love Anthems for the Damned. Let's get together." And he like, sang this melody, and I tweaked it and actually resung. I came up with this whole new melody and then added words that he had. He's like, "Remember, Richard, have you ever taken mushrooms in the desert and watched the sun go down? And, like, you just want to take a mental photograph of the whole thing." And I'm like, "Yeah." It's kind of like, it was at the whole, it was funny, the idea behind the song lyrics was actually another movie, Blade Runner, where Rutger Hauer actually wrote the part where he goes, "All these memories will disappear, like, or all these memories will fade away like tears in rain." I don't know if that's the exact line, but that, you know, all these memories will be lost in time like tears in rain. And that's just the most profound, amazing. Right. So I actually grabbed that, and then I started writing Fades Like a Photograph, which actually is another thing about that song. In many ways, it's kind of like a sequel to Take a Picture. You know, it's like, right. you know, it's like, you know, it's so.
Plus, this version is different than the version that appeared on the 2012 soundtrack, right?
This is actually a brand new version. We didn't have the expertise of Bob Marlette, and I told Bob, like, we absolutely have to redo it. We want to put it on. I want a different version. We kind of told our fans that it was going to be available in a different form, and he goes, "I'm all over it." And we decided to go with a non-guitar or a non-electric guitar, non-drum performance, because old school Filter had a lot of those, like, songs where it was just full programming and old drum machine sounds, and, you know, and so he was like, "I'm mixing it." I'm like, "What about the other version?" He's like, "Don't worry about it." And he called me up and, like, "It's in your hard drive." And I went on to my iDisc and heard it, and I was like, "That's just the great." And I actually moved it up to song five is, which is where No Reentry is. But Bob was like, you've got to go with something new. You can't go with something a different version. And I was like, "Okay." And so we put No Reentry, which I thought was going to be the last song on the record. Because it has a 3 minute long piano solo in it, which he played.
Wow.
Actually,
he's actually
a gifted, super amazing piano player. And I thought it was going to drift off into this whole thing, but, like, I think it's bold that there's a 32 measure guitar solo at the very intro of the record, which, by the way, I played that solo. I break every known rule in music, period, playing that solo, and which I'm very proud of, because pulling off an avant-garde solo with played with two screwdrivers on the strings, I think, you know, it's never been done. And then also his solo way up in the front of the record, I think, is just really cool to get away with that.
I know you've done some of this stuff live. Now, how many dates are you doing, you know, in the next month or two?
We're doing a promo tour where we're just kind of hitting the major cities, like New York, Chicago, Los Angeles. We're doing press surrounding that. We did a couple of I don't know if I'm allowed to mention this. We did an acoustic performance at LimeWire, which they have three songs. Is that bad to say
No,
that?
No, yeah,
no.
Yeah,
this
yeah,
is
yeah,
radio.
Can,
this
yeah,
is radio.
You can
yeah.
Anything
okay.
Else,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, metal radio. Yeah. So yeah, we did an acoustic performance at LimeWire, which the kids can go check out as soon as tomorrow. And this is going to be it's out now, right? And we're doing all kinds of stuff like that. I think there's going to be some TV later on, you know, later on this month after we figure out what our next single is going to be. There's just a lot of stuff. Oh, we're going back to I can't really say this, but we're going back to the Mideast for a chunk of a particular month, and we're not allowed to talk about it because it's considered troop movement. So. The last time we were in Iraq, we were under a rocket attack, and a rocket attack happened while we were there. It was unbelievable. It was the scariest, most exhilarating, incredible. It was essentially combat. I mean, you know, it wasn't full on like with machine guns blaring and everything like that, but the fear in everybody's eyes was real, and it was like, get down, and we were all on the ground, and like, wow, one of these nice people is probably going to die. You know, it was just amazing. So, we survived that, came back, and like now it's a year later, and we got to get our fix, like Hurt Locker. You know, we got to get our fix, so we're going back.
Well, it's great that you guys are doing that, and you really are one of the most hardworking, you know, musicians out there. Because I think of going to, I think it was the Bowery Ballroom to see Army of Anyone, and since then you did that record. You've done
record for the Iraqi soldiers. Yeah, I mean, I love what I do, and like I'm prepared to work really, really hard for it. And it's weird because you. I don't know when you're not really it didn't gel right after I got sober. There was some misfires and there was some weirdness and you know, and it just feels like now and especially the response that we're getting from the fans is that like you're totally back on track. Now let's just get this thing back to where it was and tour and do everything and. You know, it feels like it's really good to work. It feels really great to sing things acoustic. It feels really great to just feels like everything's gelling and it's in its right place. And I just hope it continues, you know.
Well, I think it will. And one thing I just wanted to say to before we close off here is that I love where you are and where Filter is right now. But all the other stuff that you've done and even some maybe stylistically different stuff that you did with Filter, I think it was all cool, you know.
Right. Yeah, I you know, you tend to... You know, unfortunately, sometimes you tend to become the sum total of your chart position, and I should probably be aware of that sometimes. But you know, the reality is I, you know, having thrown my, I mean, you know, I'm friends with a band that like started off at the exact same time we did, and they're like gigantic, and they literally write the same song. Exactly the same way for every single record. There's not one deviation. It's the same thing. They wear the same clothes. It's like, it's kind of spooky.
Right.
And I have, you know, my record company was like, Rich, you know, you did Hey Man, Nice Shot. You handed us Take a Picture. What the fuck are you doing? It's such a departure. How are we going to deal with this? Actually, Howie Klein was accepting of that. He was like, I don't care. I believe in this band. You know, we want to, because I was handing him Take a Picture. It's like, what are you doing? We've got this formula. We got the Hey Man, Nice Shot. You're a rock band. Be that. You use drum machines. Don't add new drums. There's a lot of people that were saying that. Howie was like, listen, they're artists. They're going to do what they want to do. Warner Brothers was always an artist-oriented label, especially Reprise. So they let me be bold. I think that the audience has been, like, after that, then I get sober, then I cancel a tour, I canceled a tour, then I got sober, then I did Army of Anyone, then I did, like, you know, there's all this other stuff, and it's like my audience has, like, been waiting for, you know, since Title of Record and Amalgama and Short Bus to, like, when are you really going to have that record that says, so I agree, I have pushed them to the limit on what I have experimented. I worked with new people. I fucking worked with Robert and Dean DeLeo and Ray Luzier. Like I have creatively, I have achieve, like, I have gone where I wanted to go. Now it's time to literally focus in on, you know, the greatest years of my career, you know, and go specifically for the audience that made those records platinum. Because you know why? Because it's the right thing to do, because those guys have been waiting, you know. And so I made a conscious decision. And that's why I don't, you know, even the tribute record, you know, Anthems for the Damned, it was still a big departure from what they're used to. So, you know, and I agree. And they were like, literally fans were like, dude, can't you just do stuff that's like Tidal? Can't you just do? And I'm like, you know what? Tidal was an experiment. Tidal of record was a huge departure from what I had done. That those first two records were like, one was black, the other one was white. It was totally, completely different. So the fact that they're saying Tidal, you know, like, is already creatively, there's so many places I can go with that. So I kind of took that and went, you know what, you're right. And I just brought back the aggression and I focused in on the songwriting and I made sure that the songs were fucking good. And that's the best I can do. So with that being said, Trouble with Angels, the kids are saying it's the best Filter record yet. I agree.
Congratulations on a great album. I think it's amazing, and we're going to encourage everybody who listens to our show to go out and go to Best Buy and buy that record.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. So thank you very much, Richard. I really appreciated you coming on today, and I've been a fan of yours for a long time.
Awesome. Thank you.
That was Drug Boy by Filter from the Trouble with Angels. Go out and buy that record. I want to thank Richard Patrick. I want to thank Michelle Fuentes Welch and everybody who helped put this interview together. Thanks again. Go out, buy the new record, The Trouble with Angels. Buy the deluxe edition, two CDs, lots of cool stuff, as you heard in both interviews. And thanks again to everybody. Visit us, guys, at www.talkingmetal.com. Go to our Twitter page, our Facebook page, all of those different things, the Talking Metal Forums, which is talkingmetalforums.com. And before I close out today, I want to tell everybody about a really special event. Tuesday, October 5th, Ace Frehley will appear at Redemption Song. It's an amazing event at Carnegie Hall's Zankel Hall in New York City. And the event is going to be hosted by Henry Rollins. It's going to feature Steven Adler, original drummer of Guns N' Roses, Daryl McDaniels from Run DMC, Ricky Lee Jones, and the one, the only, Ace Frehley. So, guys, you can buy tickets for this. Go to acefrehley.com, and you will find out all of the information that you're going to need about this great event, which is coming up Tuesday, October 5th. And then if you're in the Florida area, that one's in New York City, by the way. If you're in the Florida area, later in the week, Ace and I will be heading down to the Spooky Empire show, which is going to be in Orlando, Florida, on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of next week, which is the 8th, 9th, and 10th. So check that out. You get a chance to come and meet Ace. You can get some cool stuff signed. And we really hope to see all of the Ace fans show up down in Orlando, Florida, because it's going to be a really killer event. Okay, guys, so we're going to close today's show with my favorite track off of Ace Frehley's Anomaly. This is Genghis Khan.
How to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.